Hey folks, Tim Miller here with maybe the most important real security podcast we will do. The title is Tragedy in Memphis, Why It's Actually Worse Than You Think It Is. And I do that intentionally, folks, because the discussion we're going to have is going to be a fact-based approach from folks that understand law enforcement, are directly engaged in training law enforcement, and most importantly, are committed to the Constitution of the United States that affords protection for all of our rights. So this will be an intense podcast. I hope it's helpful. I do hope, folks, that as we are so divided and you're listening to cable news commentaries on both sides of this, what really matters, folks, is what's going on in our country and how we say this every podcast, we need to be alert and prepared for what's coming. Because what we saw in Memphis is a huge deal when it comes to living in a civilized society or living in a society where there is law and order. I don't know anyone better to have this conversation than my friend Mike. Mike's a true action hero, and he hates it when I do this, but I'm going to do it anyway. Mike served our country in the Army. As a Marine, I told him he could have made the A-team if he'd worked a little harder. But in all seriousness, I mean, Mike literally has been there, done that. I know many people that know Mike, and Mike was with Special Force, mostly elite Special Forces. And Mike is just a guy who doesn't talk about it. And folks, if you know military veterans that don't talk about it, it's usually because they've been there, done that. They don't have to blow their own horn. Well, Mike is that guy. But then Mike retired and went into training law enforcement officers. He actually was a supervisor at one of the largest law enforcement training organizations in the country. He directly oversaw tactics and firearms and use of force. I often say he taught me more about firearms instructing than anybody in my life. And he likes to remind me of that when we go to the Marine Army thing. But that's another conversation. But Mike, I'm so honored to have you here today. I'm so honored for your expertise that you're going to weigh into this conversation, because I know you and I talked very shortly after the video came out, and we were in shock. And let me say this, just so nobody wonders where Mike and I are. My heart is broken for what happened with Tyre Nichols. I am so sorry for the family. I watched the mom demonstrate supernatural grace in not calling for revenge against the, I'll use the term loosely, police officers that totally trampled Tyre's constitutional rights and protections. And so I just want to say, just from the start, there's nothing good that Mike and I saw on those videos. But it is important, folks, because I'm hearing a lot of discussion about, well, the training. And, I just want to agree with my colleague, Dan Bongino. We had similar paths. I was a police officer and then a Secret Service agent. He was NYPD and then a Secret Service agent. He came out pretty strongly saying this is not a training issue. Nobody trained those officers to terrorize, victimize, and ultimately kill people on the streets. While we're there, and you can tell I'm on a roll. While we're there, let me just say this. Folks, our country is based on an integrity-based system. That's why every officer swears an oath of allegiance to support and defend the Constitution of the United States against all enemies, foreign and domestic. One of the first things when Mike and I came into the military, you had to raise your hand.
Absolutely.
You had to say, I'm in. That's the standard, and I will not deviate for it. And regardless of, there's a lot of discussion about how our country's broken. And hey, I'm not arguing at all, folks. Listen to me, that our country's perfect. We've got some ground we need to gain. But let me tell you this. Mike and I have been in places where we could absolutely tell you that having been there, the United States is by far the most beautiful country on the earth. And we're very fortunate to be here. So, Mike, I just want to tee up right away. I know you and I talked about, we're going to focus kind of on three topics, today, folks. And that's, what does the law say you can do? I'm going to talk about, the Supreme Court case, that kind of oversees every law enforcement use of force action. We're going to talk about what did the facts in this case say? And then when does law enforcement have to stop? When can they no longer legally use force? And what are the protections in place if they cross that boundary? So, Mike, I'm going to kick it over to you. Just talk to me about what your thoughts. I mean, you've trained thousands of law enforcement officers, and specifically how to use force, when to use force, the right level of force. So you are a true expert. What were your thoughts after watching what happened in that episode?
Well, first, I'd like to send my condolences to the Nichols family, too. This should have never happened.
Yeah.
Never. What that looked like to me was a gang of thugs beating up on someone on the street. That's plain and simple what it was. There was no law enforcement aspect of protecting the community in that whatsoever. There's still a lot of facts that we don't know. So, you know, everyone has the right to prove themselves innocent.
Right.
And I will start with that.
Right.
And they will have their day to do that.
Right.
That being said, we will talk about the things that we think that they did completely wrong. And again, I'm not very familiar with the Memphis Police Department's use of force policy. I don't know if they use a continuum versus, you know, how we use Graham factors outside of the house. So, or it could be a combination of both. I don't, you know, these are things I don't know. But when we do talk about, you know, and I don't think we show the video, but when we do talk about the videos, we'll break it down a little bit more. The biggest thing out of all of this, and I'm only going to say this once, law enforcement, when everybody's saying defund the police, the first thing, and we all know this, that's cut, is training.
That's right. Yeah.
The first thing.
Yep.
And that's when things like this happen.
Mike, can I though, I mean, let's bat this around for a minute, because I think what we said in the beginning, training is not the issue here.
No.
These people were thugs. You could have trained them by the book. Let's assume the academy did, because we know large police academies are reviewed by lawyers. They know they're going to get sued. Here's what we train. Here's how you do it. The horrifying part for me was none of that applied. They thought they were above the law,
right,
and therefore didn't have to, you know, abide by any of the training, because, you know, I mean, I think you said it. I've heard others say it. When you're kicking someone in the head, that is that's a lethal use of force action.
Dan said it best on his podcast. You know, even in the UFC, they don't allow people to kick in the head.
That's right.
So
that's. Yeah. But then, you know, I'm watching as someone who's carried an ass all my life.
Yep.
That's another deadly weapon. that it breaks bones. It's designed and then a misfired taser. I mean, it seemed like every intermittent use of force that they tried, and I do mean tried, they wanted to gain control. That was not about stopping resistance, because we're going to go into the videos here in a minute, but it literally didn't matter what he did. Tyree was saying, look, what did I do? I mean, that's a fair question. If you and I are stopped, and folks, that's why this matters so much. If we don't understand the real issues at play, we can get carried down emotional boulevard. Absolutely. That's dangerous. And so let me start for one second with Graham versus Connor. It's a 1982 case, Supreme Court case. And basically at the end of the day, read it, because it governs all use of force actions by law enforcement officers. Yep. Okay. So why is that Supreme Court case so important? Because the court balanced the need to protect your Fourth Amendment rights to illegal search and seizure. Illegal seizure is not just taking your property. It's taking your body. It's restricting you from moving. And the court weighed that very, very heavily and said, whoa, wait a minute. We're the Supreme Court. We've got to protect people's, you know, first, second, third, Fourth Amendment. Right? I mean, and folks, that's another discussion, but if we're not willing to fight to protect our rights, they will be taken from us.
The Supreme Court has decided that the Fourth Amendment right is what, when you decide police officers' use of force decisions.
That's right. Yeah. And it's interesting, folks, because in this case, please read it. I mean, it really is profoundly important. Sure. The court basically puts forward Graham factors. And what that means is, officers just don't get to willy-nilly use force. There must be clear, reasonably objective facts that enables any law enforcement officer to use force of any kind. So facts versus feelings, or facts versus emotions, that's really important. And as we understand the law, without those facts, you got to turn and walk away. You have no authority absent facts in front of you that allow you to take the reasonable actions. And we're going to walk through the video and talk about where are the facts, because Mike and I, we're scratching our head.
Well, let's talk about the only fact that I know of, reckless driving.
Yeah. And even that's not been proven.
No.
And so, Mike, think about it. I mean, I've done several hundred traffic stops, probably 1,000 traffic stops. I had to have a reason to stop somebody. Cops just don't get to drive down the road and pull people over. Right. And so when the Memphis chief came out
and boxed the car in.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I think you and I talked, there's rumor out and the media is reporting that there may have been some connection. Well, that's been apparently categorically refuted, that, you know, Tyree didn't have any relationship with any of the officers, girlfriends, wives, whatever. Right. And that's an interesting thing, because you and I were talking, it might make sense that you're that amped up if you think this guy, but at the same token, oh my gosh, you don't get to be the executioner of a person, even in that case, which is, you know, not been validated or even, you know, doesn't look substantial at all. But here's the big question, and I heard the Memphis chief talk about that last night. Facts. Let's talk about facts. Reckless driving. Okay. I've stopped 100 people for reckless driving. Do I come out with my gun drawn? Am I ordering people out, grabbing them, pulling them out of the car? Well, if it's a pursuit based on a violent event prior, again, facts. But what we see right out of the bat here is there is such a heightened tension and almost a wolf pack mentality that it's scary to watch. As a matter of fact, Mike, can I go ahead and just play the initial tape, so that I'd love to get your thoughts on it.
Sure, absolutely.
Okay.
Get your ass, blow the fuck up. Get the fuck out of here.
Listen to the profanity. He didn't do anything. He's simply asking what he did.
And he's listening. Very professional.
So, hard to watch. Hard to watch.
Yes.
What did you see there as a professional trainer of law enforcement officers as they approached the car?
Well, again, we don't know what happened prior to this, but right. Guns were drawn right off the bat. They went to the car. They opened the door, which at that time we both know. And they grabbed him, pulled him out. They own him at that point.
Let me ask you this, Mike. And okay, guns are drawn. Under Graham versus Connor, again, we don't know what happened.
You already have a crime.
You already have a crime. You have an illegal seizure right there because you're pointing guns at somebody absent effect. But I do agree with you. There's still a lot more information that comes out. I don't want to rush to judgment on that.
Right.
But then for a traffic offense, they rip open a door. Talk to me about that.
Well, we teach, you know, how to use pillars and, you know, put your print on the back of the car. I didn't see any of that. But then again, at the angle, you can see that. Again, we don't know what type of stop this is. But they immediately, someone had a taser on him. I seen that.
Yeah.
For what? I don't know why. He was obeying what they were at first saying. I mean, there was no license, registration, any of that stuff. They just yanked him, threw him on the ground, and they were trying to cuff him at that point for reckless driving.
Well, and Mike, I think what you just said is probably the most salient point. He's fully cooperative.
Absolutely.
He's fully cooperative. Man, okay. But I think he realizes that this is going to go much darker and much more violent.
Right.
Because he's not getting any response of anyone trying to de-escalate. It's Tyree.
No de-escalation whatsoever.
Yeah. And tell how when you look at this, how could have de-escalation played in to that whole thing?
Oh, easily. I mean, when he was talking to them, the voice commands get lower.
Yeah.
You're not screaming at him. You're not cursing at him. The taser didn't need to be there. I mean, put that away. And again, just say, hey, you know, roll on your stomach.
Yeah.
You know, detain you for a few questions. And if everything's all right, you know, we'll release you again.
So just in context, we've already escalated, you know, now you pointed out earlier, Graham versus Connor says the facts must drive any use of force options.
Absolutely.
We have no facts that are driving that we know of, in fairness. That'll be a court case.
Yes.
But we have nothing that suggests at all that those facts were present to elevate to the level of violence. And that's what it was, the level of violence that we saw immediately. And let me pause here for a second, Mike, and we'll get to this towards the end. All these officers know they have body cams now.
Absolutely.
But they know. Yeah.
Let's back up a little bit. This unit, Scorpion unit, I think was derived on violence. They were going to send out in the community to supposedly, you know, clean up the community, whether it's, you know, get guns off the streets and drugs and stuff like that. But again, that's where training comes in. You have to know your limits.
Right.
Violence is needed and sometimes, absolutely. But then again, de-escalation of the violence needs to happen too. When people are complying with you, there's no need at that point to raise it up another notch.
So, Mike, if you and I, both certified use of force instructors, federal certified use of force instructors, were to be sent in a tape, let's say this was a training exercise, and we watched that. Just on the stop itself, what would you say to those students about, hey, how this whole thing went down?
I guess the biggest thing was, did he, Mr. Nichols, was he a threat at that point?
Good question.
Pose as a threat to these officers. And how many officers were there on site? I would say at least five. I couldn't really tell with the video, but there was quite a few of them there. He wasn't really, if they did it correctly, he shouldn't have gone anywhere.
Well, and I think that's the thing that all of America is angry about.
Absolutely.
That kid should have gone home.
Yes.
I don't want to get emotional, but crying for your mom, is there any compassion at all? Or are they literally a wolf pack?
Yes.
That considers themselves above the law? And why does this matter so much, folks? Because guess what? If this attitude is becoming more dominant across the country, we're in serious trouble. Mike was in Somalia during the whole horrific action, Black Hawk Down and all of what occurred. I was in Kenya, not during that time, but shortly thereafter on a humanitarian assistance. I've been in Nigeria. I've been across Africa. And here's what I would say, and I think Mike would agree wholeheartedly. When law and order began to erode because of corrupt police officers, and I'm going to say this is not an isolated incident. And I'm not talking just police officers. There are, I won't go into name calling, but across the spectrum, integrity in law enforcement is no longer the prime objective. I got to tell you, when I swore in both to the police department and then the Secret Service, they told you in training the quickest way to get fired is to lie and compromise your integrity.
Yeah.
And now I got to wonder, where are we? Where are we, folks, as a nation? And quite frankly, if this is not scaring you, you're tuned out. Because if they can do that to Tyre Nichols, think about what they can do to you and your family with your kids in the back. And this is not police bashing, folks. Hear me. I strongly support the police. And by the way, 99% of officers out here, they put on the uniform to go in harm's way, to protect and serve. And they're not doing this for some kind of power grab. And so it's important to put that in context too, because you can't throw the baby out with the bathwater on this. You have to say isolated incident. But what does this isolated incident suggest to you about the direction of our country? And Mike, I know, you having trained folks specifically what they can do, exactly what they can do. What do the facts tell you you can do? When do we have to stop? Hey, I'll just keep it real. I was in some major pursuits, some based on felony crimes, robberies, where we rammed cars. Tension's high at the end. Yeah. And there were times, just keeping it real, where officers had to pull other officers back and say, whoa, game over, time out, go sit over in your car.
Stop right there. Officers pulled other officers off the back. How many officers were there and nobody had it?
And then to watch him die.
Right.
Knowing the beating, in context, Mike, you and I were talking about it, one NFL major hit has shown that the whole world knows that causes potential brain damage and pertain, TBI the kick alone, much less. And we're going to get into the second part of this video, but we've always trained our folks. Once the resistance stopped, all force stops. Nice. You take off your police hat and you put on your EMS hat. Even if you shot him or her, you're now responsible to care for them.
Absolutely.
And it's shocking.
As soon as they opened that door, they were responsible for that individual.
Good point. Yeah, good point. And, I think that just on the first part, just on the stop itself, the elephant in the room is, what amped those guys up?
Yeah.
But, I mean, they were out of, they were the wolf pack before the pursuit. And let's just argue that he was driving recklessly. Okay. You know, that does get you amped up, but not to that one.
Right.
You know,
every time I come home from the gym, Tim, I see people on their cell phones crossing over that yellow line, coming into your lane.
Yeah.
It's every day.
Yeah.
I mean, to what extent he was driving recklessly? No idea.
Yeah. And, you know, then it gets to the definition of what is reckless, you know, for, you know, some police officers, you know, they're going to be up, you know, by speed alone, it's reckless. And I know Virginia has laws. Other states have laws on when you, you know, it's automatically reckless. Right. But the thing that perplexes me is, folks, listen, the chief's statement that they couldn't validate that driving, despite numerous cops in the sky on those poles that should have been able to validate it. And all this is going to come out. But it does cause you to question, was it really reckless driving? I don't know.
Yep.
We'll see. And, you know, my talk also, I know that in our training environment that we were kind of taught how to manage the emotions of incidents, the human performance stuff. This is what happens. Here's how you got to bring yourself down. The concerning thing, did you see anybody trying to bring themselves down?
Not at all. And again, a lot of that comes back to training.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
And you've been there before. Now, obviously, right. These guys, you know, I'm sure this wasn't the first time they've done this.
Yeah.
It's just that this is the first time that the individual probably passed away.
Well, you know, it does cause me to question, though. I was with Fairfax County Police outside of D.C. and, for anything remotely related, it was a violent patrol area. We had all kinds of stuff going on. Sure. But anything violent, I had a sergeant on scene within 2 minutes. And quite frankly, the sergeant, he made it clear. I'm not your buddy. I'm the umpire. I'm going to call fouls. I'm going to call balls and strikes. Like I see him. Right. If you're out of control, I'm going to put you back in your cruiser and tell you to go back to the station. And that happens, you know, because they've been around. They understand the emotion. But everything I saw in this situation was just fundamentally out of control. And again, I begin to wonder, is this systematic in other maybe large police agencies where crime is going up and, you know, police feel like they have to be the final arbitrators now of justice, which is horrifying. So let's look at this next one, Mike. Hard to watch, folks. When I say it breaks my heart. I don't even know how to put that into words. And you know, let's take a look. This is after the stop. These are the kicks to the head that you were talking about, Mike. Baton strikes, standing him up and sucker punching him while he's handcuffed. Now, you can tell right now he's not even in the game.
No, he isn't.
Look at this.
That's a windup. Ugh.
And you know what? In all fairness, by now, medically, his brain's swelling. He's in a huge crisis.
And that's being OC'd. And I think at one point I seen the officer throw the can down on the ground on a previous video, probably because it was empty. And just imagine how much OC that is to put on an individual. You know, they OC'd him a lot in the face.
And, you know, the problem with OC, I've used it, you know, I'm sure you have too, you know, probably 100 times. It was kind of cool at first until you deploy it. And then you realize everybody gets it.
Oh, and go ahead. He did. They OC'd each other quite a bit.
Yeah.
There's one officer who got, you know, he went out of the picture for a little bit to get his vision back, most likely. And then he came back in.
Yeah. You know, here we go again. Handcuff sus. What are the facts? Handcuff suspect not resisting.
Not resisting.
absolutely under your entire control. Mm-hmm. And this is a beatdown. And I think you said it, and it's true. It's no different than a gang mentality in a major city where 6, 7, 8 people will beat down someone to the, you know, in some of those cases, it is to kill them. That's what they're trying to do because right. they recognize others. It's robbery. Others want them unconscious, but the police, I mean, talk to me about the facts that you saw in this second video.
Resistance level of Mr. Nichols was zero.
Yeah.
Was not resistant at all. As much as they, you know, they want to say he was. I mean, they were, like you said, they were literally holding him up so they can inflict more damage to that individual. So, again, that's one of the factors. Was he resisting? Not at all. Not at all. Did he pose a threat to those 5 individuals who were, you know, anywhere between 5'8 and 6'3, you know, probably 200 and something pounds? Mr. Nichols was 6'3, 150 pounds.
That's a gram factor too, isn't it?
Absolutely. Size.
Yeah. Size.
So,
yeah.
There was no de-escalation. What they were doing was even escalating the use right. of force even more.
Right.
After the fact, when it wasn't needed at that right. point. Once I got the cuffs on him, what was he doing to deserve that? That's my question. What did he do? You cuffs are on.
Right.
It took him long enough to get the cuffs on him. That's another whole issue there. But, you know, why did you continue to do what they did?
So 71 commands, Mike, in 3 minutes. And I know you were talking about a phenomenon with students where they get in the loop. They get in the loop. They get in the loop.
Goofy loop. Yes.
Yeah. Talk to me about that.
During training, you see a lot of students in, like drop the gun, drop the gun, drop the gun, drop the gun, drop the gun. If the individual is not dropping the weapon, well, you need to start thinking about what's your next step.
Right.
But they just get in that goofy loop and they just, I mean, that's all they know is drop the gun, drop the gun. They're supposed to drop the gun. Well, they didn't drop the gun. Show me your hands. Show me your hands. Show me your hands. Show me your hands. You're holding his hands.
Right.
They're holding his hands. They're holding.
That's a good point. Yeah.
Show me your hands. Show me your hands. Show me your hands. Show me your hands. You had his hands. What did you, Debbie? That was the goofy loop that came back to a training scar somewhere in their training down the road. But that's.
Or Mike, maybe it's the diabolical me. Was this performance? Yeah. Was this the body cam awareness? Because I do believe that although they were vicious right from the start, they were not mindful that eye in the sky was going to capture every single thing in context. Because you and I know body cams, they get blocked, they get, you know, knocked down. I think. Yeah, there was a case where one of the officers' body cams, you know, got knocked on the ground. And so the concerning thing to me is in the midst of this beatdown with that goofy loop going, you know, were they trying to theatrically protect? I don't know that, you know, only they know. I do know statements made after the fact were very suspicious, having worked in internal affairs. You know, hey, did you see the guy going for my gun? Well, there's no evidence, none, zero evidence of that. And I think they realized at that point, we may have gone a little bit too far. But to your point, were the cameras ever turned off in the past? Was this dealt out on the street?
I don't think they knew that pole cam was there.
I agree.
That was going down.
I agree. And I think even if they did, they don't care. You know,
the heartbreaking part of all of this is he was so close to his house. He was just trying to get home to his mother.
I know.
And they deprived him of that.
Well, and I think too, it's important for non-law enforcement personnel to understand as we're putting forth exactly the standard that is, not should be, This is not a pie in the sky thing. The sacred protection of your Fourth Amendment right against illegal search and seizure is covered by the Supreme Court in the Graham v. Connor. Even if it's a force continuum, application, that's even more stringent because now you've got to kind of justify every level of escalation for why you went up or down. I am very concerned, folks, and hear me, that this had nothing to do with training per se, as much as it did, and I'm going there, recruitment.
Yeah.
Who are you hiring?
Yeah.
And then at the end of the day, integrity. Because if an officer comes into a department pressed on power, we all ought to be scared. I've been in countries where the police set up checkpoints to extort money from you, where the government looks the other way. And folks, defunding the police is not the answer. That, as a matter of fact, it's going to exacerbate a problem. Somehow we've got to figure out how do we change recruiting structures to where people are excited to go serve, protect others. And then, I was sharing with you, Mike, every job I've ever had required a polygraph. Everyone. Now, whether you believe in it or not, at least you understood kind of the baseline of the person that's coming in. We jokingly, when I was applying to the police department, polygrapher told a story of an applicant coming in and he asked him about, hey, have you committed any crimes? And he said, well, what do you mean by crimes? And he said, well, like, I don't know, car theft or, robbery. And he goes, well, yeah, I've done car thefts. And he said, oh, okay. Well, how many times? A few times. When was the last time? Yesterday. He had the stolen car in the lot. And so when you hear experiences like that, right. The point is that we need to have clear hiring standards that, it makes sure that we're going back to hiring people of integrity and commitment. And I think that's what's lacking right now. The police as a whole they're taking such political hits in the media, oftentimes they're reported as, being, out for one agenda, and that's to control and victimize people. And
that same day that this happened, there were thousands of police officers pulling over individuals.
That's right.
Thousands.
Yeah.
And they're
doing it the right way.
Doing a professional job.
Yeah. And, it's interesting, Mike, because one of the podcasts is coming out soon is one of the heroes from Parkland, the second guy into the Parkland massacre. Right. And, Captain Scott Myers had no agenda other than going into a place where he knew he could lose his life, walking in and finding the bodies of dead students. And yet here's a SWAT guy who's highly trained tactically that didn't feel like when he screamed up, jumped out of his cruiser, that he had time to run and grab his rifle because kids were dying. So he ran in with a handgun. Folks, those are heroes.
Correct.
That we should be celebrating, that we should be saying thank you to every day. And unfortunately, when an incident like this happens, it tarnishes all law enforcement and it causes, hey, I got to tell you, this caused me to really go, whoa, which is why I'm doing this podcast, folks, because you need to hear the balance. You need to hear that most officers believe in our Constitution. That's why I get really angry.
Well, you need to hear the good stories too.
That's right.
The news only shows the bad stories. And that's
That's a huge issue.
Right.
Yeah. So, Mike, in hindsight, obviously it looks like our constitutional protections are going to work. They were immediately indicted for murder and arrested for murder and several firings. But what would you say, Mike? What are some for people who are out here that are going, hey, thanks for the information. It really validates that this thing went off the tracks. Is there a training solution to this?
Facts paint the picture.
Yeah.
And I think they didn't realize that poll camera was there, and I thought they were going to do another beatdown. I think they had a history of that. I can't say for sure, but just by watching them. And I think the most disturbing part of the video was after the fact, when they put Mr. Nichols up against the car, they just left them there. And they're up there high-fiving each other, and worried one guy's limping, about his wounds and stuff like that. And you just beat this guy down to a pummel and then left him there. That was one of the most sickening things that I've ever seen.
Yeah. And unfortunately, going back to your original point, that's how thugs behave.
Yeah.
That's what you do when you've scored your victim to the point where she can't respond anymore.
He couldn't even sit up on the car by himself. He was so
right
out of it, if you want to say.
Well, and Mike, you've been in bad situations. I've been in bad situations. It is not unusual in the least that a person that's been through that kind of trauma can function at all. I think, when you look at the medical, and we have some folks on our team, I'd love to kind of get their perspective. He was virtually non-functioning from the point where he took those initial blows.
Right.
Because like you said, at 150 pounds, being hit by, I would argue some of those officers were way more than 2 1/4. They were big guys.
They were very,
yeah,
very big.
And so, you look at that and you're like, oh, dear God, he couldn't have responded. And I think, he sensed the fear right from the word go. And that's why he went in the wind. I just wish he had made it to his house.
Exactly.
Because even they, mm-hmm. in front of his parents, wouldn't have done to that man what they did. And again, I hope this is a wake up call for America, as we turn the corner and we come back to the systematic erosion of constitutional liberties and not politics, folks, right to free speech, Second Amendment, the Fourth Amendment issues. These are all dangerous, rights that we have if we don't protect them. And fortunately, regardless, I know there's a growing number of people that feel like the constitutional protections that we've been afforded, are not for this time. I would disagree. I think this is a great case of, hey, the founders were very wise in writing a constitution that protects life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. Not two of the three, but all three, starting with life. And I think it's really important that every person that listens to this podcast, that you evaluate where are we in terms of our constitutional protections and how do we get engaged in positive things, bridging gaps that will protect those rights. Because we all know, Mike, you and I have been in the places where they don't exist, and it's a living hell. Yep. People are traumatized, victimized, tyranny reigns. You don't own anything. Government owns it all. And if they want it, they take it.
Life's
I don't
cheap.
Want to live in a place Life like
that. It's cheap. And a lot
yeah,
of
that's right. And unfortunately, I think, as in Tyree Nichols' case, maybe life's becoming cheaper in the U.S. And I don't think this is, anything that anyone should look at and go, oh, that's sad. Be sad, but get engaged. How do we stand together, united? I gotta go back as we wrap up to the graciousness of Tyree Nichols' mom.
Yes.
It wrecked me. And I think she will be remembered for wanting justice while wanting unity in the process. And that's really the takeaway for this podcast. We all want justice. But folks, if we continue to stand divided, you know, that this group is evil and everybody else is good, or however, it's going to do nothing. You know, the Bible says a house divided against itself cannot stand. And as we wrap up, Mike, I just want to thank you for your service, because I think it's important that people have an authentic, educated, experienced voice in this. And certainly, you've trained well, brother. I've been a part of your training. I've been a part of, learning from you. I still do a lot of my training, based on what, you know, you taught me through the years. So, I just want to say thanks, you know, thanks for your service to our country, for your service to thousands of law enforcement officers across the country. And, any parting comments, Mike?
Well, thank you, Tim, for this opportunity. And, again, my sorrows and prayers go out to the Nichols family. The court will examine at this point now the totality of circumstances that happened during this horrific incident, and we will watch it. And justice will be served.
Yeah, and I think it will be. I do think it will be swift justice. I think it will. You know, every one of those defendants is, you know, protected under the Constitution. They have their rights. We want due process. We don't want a vigilante mob, because that's what they were.
Yes.
They were a vigilante mob that, for whatever reason, still to be determined, took Tyre Nichols' life. And so, folks, I hope this has been helpful and educational for you. Anytime. We have situations like this where I'm going to bring on real experts like Mike. We've got some other folks that we can weigh into this, but right now I just wanted to get this out. Do me a favor though. The whole Real Security podcast is about it, giving you accurate, experienced, certified experts, to come and help you keep your family safe. So, please like, share. We're going to put some stuff out just on pieces in this and some of the things Mike has commented on. But let me be clear as we end. This incident had little to do with training and everything to do with integrity. Those officers displayed no integrity. They were a wolf pack. They were dangerous, and I'm glad they're off the street. And if they're more like them, I pray for the internal affairs units that they identify them, prosecute them, and dismiss them, because we can't afford in a free country to have the police running the state absent the protections that we've been given under the Constitution. So remember, like, share, subscribe, get the word out. And we'll be back again. We've got a great podcast coming up again from the hero of one of the heroes from Parkland on what to do when the police show up in an act of violence situation, because that information can definitely save your life. And he talks about some of the same things that officers face, that we saw this set of officers do everything wrong. He talks about how their team did everything right. And I'm very grateful, and we're going to learn from Scott. So Mike, stay safe, and we'll get you again for another round. You can't run from me anymore. I got you. And I'm very thankful for our friendship. Stay safe, brother.
Thank you, Tim. Good seeing you.